He's part of the heart and soul that is the Philadelphia Union, 37-year-old Alejandro Bedoya. A soccer fan as well as a player, Bedoya will never forget the summer he met the great Cristiano Ronaldo poolside during a family vacation.
But we were sitting poolside, then he comes out and, you know, he gets in the shower and he just, you know, kind of shows off the great body that he has compared to my man bod. My wife was just, I'm sure, checking it out too.
Bedoya has spoken at length with another huge soccer fan, the 76ers' Joel Embiid. Hear about that and more with the Union's Alejandro Bedoya next on Fresh 24. Alejandro Bedoya, the heart and soul of the Philadelphia Union, born in the U.S., though, of Colombian descent, 66 caps from the U.S. national team, family man, businessman, foodie and wine connoisseur, and I will argue the most important man ever to wear the blue in Philly. Alejandro Bedoya, welcome to Fresh 24.
Thank you, Mark. Wow, that was quite the introduction. I appreciate it.
No, you deserve it. It's all from the resume here. I do not lie. Listen, I'm actually pleased to be doing this podcast, not only because you're you, but I'm thinking last year, after the loss against Cincinnati in the playoffs, conventional wisdom was you weren't going to be around. Did something happen to change that? Give me some insight.
Yeah, look, basketball, I think, enjoys free agency, right? Because it's so much fun and there's so many things happening. So, you know, MLS is getting there, I guess, maybe a little bit with its the free agency action. But I think it was a moment in time where things weren't looking like I was going to stick around. But I think everybody in the room became adults. We all put the two and two together and decided it was a good thing for all parties involved, and I'm happy to be back. You know, as is my family. Obviously, it's a little bit harder to move once you got kids, right? You know, to uproot the family to go somewhere maybe for a year or two is maybe not ideal. And I'm just happy here. You know, we love Philadelphia, and you know, I've loved everything about being a Union player so far. And yeah, and now we get to enjoy another season. And so far, it's been a decent start to the season. So things are, you know, everybody's in a good mood at the moment.
Yeah, the team's been in really good form as we record this in early April. Part of you coming back, you're playing a number of different roles now, coming off the bench. And in fact, even played the sixth spot against Portland when you were down to 14 guys. Was that part of it? The fact that they say, all right, we'll bring you back, but you got to be able to do X, Y, and Z in addition to all the other stuff you normally do.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Mark, I think, you know, there's obviously the sporting side of things, and then there's the business side of the sport, right? And, you know, the business model here with the Union is to, you know, they've invested a lot into the academy to help grow the youth and young talent coming through. So as an older player, you know, if I'm playing, you know, I'm taking some minutes away maybe from younger guys, right? So obviously part of my role coming back was, you know, look, you are an experienced player, a good player, but I think if you can also help with the development of players, it'd be great. And, you know, I think that's something that I've always done anyways as a captain, right? As a player is helping the young guys based on my experience, right? So even when I was here, when we had the Aronsons here, right? Brendan and Paxton Aronsons, for those who don't know, grew up right here across the bridge in Medford, Jersey. And then with the Mark McKenzie's, the Austin Trusties, you know, I think though these are guys that are always willing to learn and grow as players and stay after training. And I've always been the type of guy to do extra, you know, whether it's passing or shooting exercises. And so, you know, it's just about continuing that. And also, like you mentioned, the Portland game, there are, because we have so many guys that are representing their countries in international play, there's going to be moments where we need numbers, right? And so, of course, having someone like myself, I think an experienced, solid player to, you know, fill in the gaps when we do have players out, and can get the job done. And we were able to do that in Portland is another reason why I was adamant that I could definitely, you know, provide still a lot of value to the club and to the team. And so, you know, I'll just keep chugging away, keep working and using my experience as a player. You know, if it is a substitute role late in games, I know I can still impact the game in a great positive way when the game, you know, games open up a bit and I have, you know, there's more time and space on the ball. You just use my soccer IQ to pick out spots and pick out the right plays and passes and, you know, things of that nature.
All right. Ninth year with the team, and I'm going back to 2016. You arrived then in August. Jim Curtin arrived a little bit before you, about a year or two before you. So you guys have pretty much been joined at the hip. When I was in the NBA, I remember asking Greg Popovich about Tim Duncan, clearly he's a Hall of Famer for crying out loud. But more importantly, I asked Pop about Duncan's role taking Pop's mandate as a coach and helping to enforce it in the locker room. Do you play a similar role with the union?
Yeah, I think I'm served kind of that intermediary, right? Between the staff and what, you know, the upper the staff wants to do and the locker room. Jim never steps into the locker room here at the training center, right? So whether it's me going into his office or out on the field and whatever he wants to relay or get across to the team, he lets me know and I make sure I share the message. You know, we got some other leaders like Andre Blake and perhaps Jacob Glessness as well and Jack Elliott. But for the most part, yeah, it's always he knows he can rely on me and I know I can go to him about certain things. And even we've built that trust, right, that I think is so important from player coach or coach to player to have, where, you know, I know I can go to him and express my feelings about how maybe things are going from how I'm seeing it or from what maybe I'm hearing in the locker room, right? So I think, yeah, you know, a lot of relationships are built on trust, and we have that for sure. I mean, besides being a great, great coach, he's just a great person, right? And I think what people don't often see, right, the day-to-day is the man managing of players, right? You got to manage the egos, the personalities, and he does that to some extent. But I think I take over, of course, in the locker room of making sure that everybody understands their roles, is held accountable to a certain extent. And, you know, I keep it loose. I'm the kind of guy that keeps it loose. You know, between the white lines, it's all business. And outside, you know, you gotta be able to enjoy it.
With the way you play, I can't see you keeping it loose, but I'll take your word for that. Ali, some fans, they resent players using their notoriety as a platform. You certainly don't shy away from that. 2019 in particular, the game at DC, you score a goal, you grab the field mic to implore Congress to pass legislation against gun violence. Was that premeditated or did it just suddenly hit you?
No, it was not premeditated. I always go back to this point where I don't score often. So I don't have time to prepare like goal celebrations like maybe, you know, attackers do and more offensive players. So it was just I don't know. I sometimes allude to it as a premonition or something, because that weekend, right, that was the same weekend that the shooting in Dayton, in El Paso, Texas, first happened, and then the one in Dayton, back-to-back nights. And we're sitting in our hotel room in D.C., and, you know, whatever channel you put on, it's discussing the mass shootings. Wherever you go on social media, discussing that. So it was just top of mind. And I ended up scoring very early on in that game in D.C., literally just probably a mile or two away from the Capitol, right? And I went over to the corner to celebrate with my teammates' family, who I saw in attendance there when I went over towards that corner. I spotted them, gave them a big hug, and for whatever reason, out of the corner of my eye, I saw the mic on the field, and not knowing it was a hot mic, right, just that it was there, you know, and yelled out what I did, you know, hey, Congress, do something. And I, you know, we're living in an age, I feel, of athlete empowerment. And I think a lot of that is due to NBA players' actions, actually. You know, the way NBA players have really, you know, used their platform to be vocal about a lot of things. And ever since doing that, you know, I've been able to join every town and other initiatives, which I think, I know, guys like Steve Kerr or other folks around the league as well that are very, very vocal about using their platform to, you know, combat gun violence and just, you know, try to be supportive of families that have suffered from gun violence and you know, standing up for what's right, you know, a better society.
You mentioned the NBA, the Sixers. We're going to talk about the Sixers. You met Joel Embiid. We're going to talk about that. I hate to go here, but I have friends, I have colleagues. They don't appreciate soccer. You're a professional player. You've been involved with soccer your whole life. I love the game, certainly. Explain the beauty of soccer from your perspective.
The beauty of soccer. I can go on and on about this, but... Well, it's the global game for a reason, right? It's the most popular game worldwide. I think it's just when you really get to the nuances of the game, right? The ebbs and flows and trying to understand defensively all the different strategies. You know, similar to NBA, you have so many different strategies in terms of if you go man or if you play zone, things of that nature. But you really see... I'm not one of those guys that plays, I would say, the beautiful game in a way where, you know, guys on FIFA, maybe from the NBA players are used to playing, trying to do step overs and all these moves. But when you really understand the intricacies of trying to, you know, us Americans, we're so used to using our hands in all our sports, right? To throw a baseball, to pass the basketball with two hands, to shoot. But you really understand the difficulty of, you know, trying to pretend hit a ball, a diagonal ball with your laces is almost the equivalent of seeing like Tom Brady just chuck a ball to the corner of the end zone on a 60-yard pass. I mean, it's much harder and more beautifully done, you know, when you see the soccer ball motion, I feel like. And then you just see the passion of the game that soccer has in all parts of the world, the way the game is played and the amount of people that play, where you bring so many cultures together. I mean, there's reasons why they call it a beautiful game. I think the ability to unite people from all over the world. I mean, here at the Union alone in Philly, we have 16 different nationalities represented. I mean, there's not often other sports has that ability, right? To bring so many people from so many backgrounds and together. But I think, Americans are also used to high scoring games. I get that, you know, basketball is a lot of back and forth, but same with soccer. I mean, I average 9 miles a game running, you know, back and forth, a lot of back and forth. And so, you know, when you see off the ball action, what's happening, you know, off the ball and the spacing and the types of runs that are being made, I think there's so much beauty in the emotion, you know, of soccer players and the way you can do things with the ball at your feet, with your feet instead of your arms. But hey, look, if we had a lot of games this weekend, you know, 3-3, 4-3 games, if you made them count for touchdowns, you know, you're looking at 28, 21 games, which is not a bad football game in the NFL. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, but you know, I'm just the kind of guy who I appreciate the fact that it is difficult to score. To me, and we said this before we started rolling and recording, that as soon as the ball's kicked off, there's tension because one goal and boom, the entire games change, the tactics can change, that sort of thing. So I'm just trying to get my friends to appreciate the fact that there's beauty leading up to it. There's beauty in defending. There's beauty in all the teamwork it takes to just advance the ball up the field. And in your words, not using your hands, because we're used to seeing that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. I think before the game, there's so much tension and there's discussion about how, you know, we're going to, what the lineup's going to be. And, you know, this last game was a great example of it that we had, right? Normally we're so used to Union, are you so used to coming out in a 4-4-2 diamond, right? And then this Jim decided to switch it up a bit and go for a 3-5-2, you know, three in the back, or technically five defenders, but three center backs and like wingers. And so tactically there's so much involved in the game. But like you said, once a goal goes in, it, you know, it changes everything. And I think the one thing with soccer that I think is also different, that you can enjoy the beauty of it, is I feel like the other sports that we're used to in America, they rely a lot on the coach, right? Especially in football, the X's and O's, every play is called by the coach or by an offensive coordinator onto the field. And I think in soccer, you have so much autonomy, you know, amongst the players, right? So it's a very player-centric game. And I think that makes it more, I think, appealing when you see how much goes into every single player having a huge importance in the outcome of a game.
Yeah, I mean, there's a framework, there's a style of play, but within that, there is a lot of freelancing, I'm sure.
I
want to get into Major League Soccer in particular, because here's a league that was formed when you were in elementary school, and certainly it has come a long way. It has established itself in sports in the United States on that stage, maybe not up to the level of the other four sports, but still, it's got a part of the landscape now. How did it get there, in your view? What did it do right? And what does it have to do right in the next 20, 30 years to grow even more?
Yeah, look, MLS has definitely come a long, long way, right? I think, you know, even myself, when I came out of college, I was still adamant that I needed to go to Europe. You know, the minimum salaries were very, very low at that time. But now, you know, the minimum salary is up over $80,000 a year, which, you know, still got a ways to go to compete with the other leagues, but it's definitely grown. It's grown in the aspect of gaining respect across the world, right? Because the quality of the league has gotten better. Before, there wasn't a big push to sign younger European players or a lot of young talent from South America. You know, South America now has become a hotbed for a lot of MLS teams. Typically, a lot of the South American players would tend to, the young ones, talented ones, would go straight to Europe, where now a lot of them, you know, see MLS as a stepping stone, as an option as well. I think since, you know, the World Cup in 94 to where it is now, you know, the league needed to have the CBA or, you know, had to have certain metrics in place to protect the league from folding like it happened with the NASL. But, you know, we've seen over time it's gotten less restrictive, finally got free agency in place after the last CBA. The DP, you know, rule with the David Beckham coming into the league changed a lot, changed the dynamic. A lot of people say it saved the league, right? Having David Beckham come in, and now we're seeing the second phase of probably maybe the next step that MLS has to take with the introduction of Messi. And actually, while we're doing this podcast, I believe owners are actually having a meeting out in LA to see what other changes could be made to the league, which I think needs to be made, you know, to capitalize on the momentum of having the World Cup in 26 here in the States. You know, we've never had as many eyes as we do in this league now. You know, obviously Messi has helped, but with the new Apple deal, the amount of investment ownership groups have made in the new expansions and expansion teams. And I think what's helped the league a lot also is, I think, just being in America. And you know, America is very, how do I say?
We love our sports. We love our sports.
We love our sports, but it's very attractive to a lot of players, a lot of people all over the world. I mean, I can tell you from firsthand experience, while I played in Europe 9 years, and being in those European locker rooms, like, where do people spend their times in the off season? Okay. They'd go to LA, they'd go to Miami, they'd go to New York. They loved being in America, you know. They loved, you know, the movies, the Hollywood, you know, the beaches in Miami, you know, the nightlife in New York City, whatever it may be, you know. And a lot of them, actually, we connected through basketball, too. A lot of them were NBA fans, so they'd love to come here and sit courtside, you know, at NBA games. So MLS becomes even more successful to attract more quality players, you know, just by being in America. I think that, you know, that gets overlooked at times. We have great infrastructure. You know, we have great training facilities. I think, obviously, football, soccer is the main sport in so many countries in Europe and South America. But, you know, with those traditions come a lot of, yes, history, But with history comes a lot of old, maybe, infrastructure in terms of training facilities and stadiums, which is awesome to be a part of. But a lot of the stuff in MLS is brand new and state of the art, you know, and that's very attractive to a lot of players. So, yes, MLS has definitely come a long way, and it's going to continue to grow. You know, obviously franchise valuations continue to grow across sports. You know, sports ownership is seen as a great asset class. But I think MLS, as long as it continues to, you know, get rid of the training wheels, you know, maybe do so more a little bit quicker now to capitalize on this momentum, you're going to be able to attract top quality talent and players that are going to play here. That's going to make the league even better. It's going to get more eyes on the league. And eventually, you know, MLS wants to compete on a global stage in terms of being one of the best leagues in the world. And so if it's going to become a league of choice for players, you know, I think it's going to need to allow, you know, more spending for those owners that want to spend more.
Yeah, you're clearly somebody who's comfortable talking about business. And I know you got a business head and you have plans for that. We're going to talk about that and your role bringing the World Cup to Philly in 2026. But now it's halftime. And I'm going to give you a choice between two different things. And you have to give me your choice, and you have to do it really quick. Are you ready to do that?
Let's do it.
All right. I just want to say first that our halftime segment is being brought to you by Garage Beer. This is our six-pack of questions brought to you by Garage Beer. Beer-flavored beer, Allie. Find some near you at drinkgaragebeer.com. Here we go. Are you ready?
Let's go for it.
Just blurt it out. Cheesesteak or soft pretzel?
Cheesesteak.
Center City or South Jersey?
Center City.
Gritty or Philly Fanatic?
Gritty.
Meek Mill or Hall & Oates?
Meek Mill.
Dr. J or Allen Iverson throwback?
Allen Iverson throwback.
Liberty Bell or Rocky Steps?
Rocky Steps.
And just for grins, Messi or Ronaldo?
Messi all day.
All right. Even though you did meet Ronaldo, hopefully we'll have a chance to talk about that. By the way, speaking of Messi, I may be the only person alive who saw both Messi and Pele score in Philly. I watched Pele with Cosmos take on the Adams at Franklin Field on Penn's campus a million years ago. And then, of course, the Messi goal last year in Leagues Cup, which was not one of his greatest all-time goals. But I got a chance to see it. It was special.
That's pretty cool.
Although it was against the Union. Awesome. Yeah. Anyway, the six-pack of questions brought to you by Garage Beer. Beer-flavored beer. Find some near you at drinkgaragebeer.com. And now I will give you a handful of artists from my music library. You tell me if you have them. Are you ready?
Okay, let's go.
You too.
Yes.
Led Zeppelin.
No.
Mount Joy.
Yes.
Al Green.
Yes.
Busta Rhymes.
Busta Rhymes, yep.
Meek Mill.
Yes.
We can hang a little bit. All right. Your go-to before games? Who's in your
Who's my go-to? Yeah, I got all over the place. I got some hip-hop and I got some reggaeton, a lot of reggaeton. And yeah. But you too, I like you too. You got to see that the DVD special, you too at San Siro in Milan, in Italy.
Ah, nice. I would have liked to have been in Milan to see them do that, record that.
That special is unbelievable, though, yeah.
Born in Englewood, New Jersey, but you moved to Florida. At what age?
About 9 years old, yeah, 8, 9.
Okay, so Western Florida, it's about 40 miles west of Fort Lauderdale. It's actually closer to the Everglades than it is to the beach. What's Western Florida about?
Western Florida, yeah. I don't even think it is that far, 40 miles. That seems like a long... yeah, it's more like 20-30 minutes from Fort Lauderdale. But Weston is literally a suburb that was made from, like you said, in the middle of Everglades. They literally took sand from the ocean, took it over to the Everglades, and they built this town, this city, Weston. So it's west of Florida in the Everglades. And it's got a couple of nicknames, one of them being like Westonzuela, because a lot of Venezuelans and South Americans there. I think that's how they promoted the city initially, to get people to move out there. You know, it's one of those gated community type cities where, you know, a lot of the different little neighborhoods, communities are gated. You know, typical nice upper, I guess, middle income earning families suburb in America. But mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. I had a great time. Went to a great high school, which I think, I don't know if people recognize the high school by name, but St. Thomas Aquinas High School. It's more known for, as a football like powerhouse, right? So sure. I think at one point, I think was it last year or two seasons ago, we had like about 12 active NFL players come from St. Thomas Aquinas High School. Yeah, so.
Any other MLS players from?
Any other MLS players? Not that I know of, no.
Okay. Now, your dad played the game, your grandfather played the game. Was it just predestined that you were going to play the game?
I think so. I guess so. I think my father was my number one kind of fan and was living vicariously through me. But my grandfather lived with us in our home in Weston, right? He lived in the guest house. So soccer was always on, whether it was on TV. You know, I'm not afraid to say now we had that good old black box back in the day, right, where we were able to watch games from Italy and Argentina and Colombia, obviously, and everywhere. And my grandfather would be listening on the radio, games from, you know, Argentina and Italy. Those are the two leagues that they really enjoyed watching. And then my father would always be the one whenever he was home and not traveling. We'd go out to the track, work on, you know, stamina, endurance, and like at like 6 in the morning to avoid the heat, the Florida heat. I was bound to be a soccer player.
And you mentioned that you did not enter the MLS Super Draft, but you went, played professionally in Sweden. You met your wife there, a native of Norway. How did that all happen?
Yeah, so obviously because podcast reasons, I'll give the short version. But I met her in Sweden. Yeah, so you know, as athletes, you go to Sweden, you expect every girl has blonde hair, blue eye, right? But she was actually a physiotherapist as well. So she had her own private practice, and she was helping with the team. And you know, I think long story short, put two and two together, and that's, you know, I was getting some treatment, and we connected, and. Rest is history.
Tell me about the chance meeting that you and your wife had with Cristiano Ronaldo. I think you ended up writing, a first-person piece for Sports Illustrated about it. Tell me a little bit about how that happened.
Yeah, that was in the offseason. We had just got done with the World Cup, actually. And it was time to, you know, relax a bit and spend some quality time together as a family. I think that was that the summer after? Yeah, it was the summer after. I forget exactly when, but we were in Miami. We stayed and we decided to have a staycation, actually, because I was visiting my family in Weston, and we had a staycation out of Miami Beach, and we stayed at the Edition Hotel there on South Beach. And one morning we went to go work out, you know, trying to stay fit in the off season, and we were just in the gym, and all of a sudden, I didn't see him, but my wife and my sister, actually, who was there with us, saw him walk by. And they're like, oh, my God, that was Cristiano. I was like, no way, no chance he's here. And right enough, they went outside. And, you know, the Edition has a couple pools at the hotel. And, of course, he has his own pool on one side, him and just his family closed off for his side. But and we had another side. And it just so happened I got my agent to reach out to actually his agent just to give him a heads up. And the next day he actually approached me at the pool. He had his own cabana, but this time he was on with the guest side. And he invited us into his cabana. And he's like, yeah, I remember you. We played each other in the World Cup. And my agent told me you were here, so come and kick it. And he got his friend, this guy Ricky, and came and got us. And then we just kicked it in his cabana for a little bit, just chatted, you know, all things Real Madrid, soccer in general, the World Cup, and just all types of things. So he was super down to earth, something that I actually was a little bit surprised at, you know, that he was that open. And just chill and relax. So that was very nice of him. And, you know, we took a couple pictures and just hung out for a good like 30 minutes. So that was cool. And then as I got back to our seats where we were sitting poolside, then he comes out and, you know, he gets in the shower and he just, you know, kind of shows off the great body that he has compared to my man bod. and my wife was just, I'm sure, checking it out too.
Ali, you mentioned Real Madrid. We all know Joel Embiid is a huge Real Madrid fan. And in fact, I saw you at a Sixers game some years back. I think you met Joel at a practice. What was the vibe with Joel like?
Yeah, the vibe was great. I think Joel was super cool. He was able to come over and greet us. I was out there with Jim and Danny, a couple other guys. And, you know, he was one of the, you know, I would say obviously the nicer guys, because he was over, came over and said hello and then stuck around. And we just hit it off. We talked about, you know, all things soccer. He's a big soccer fan, obviously. Big Real Madrid fan. We talked about that. I think they were having a Champions League game or something, because we started talking about he started talking about tactics and players and all the things. So he's really into it. It's great to see. And, you know, just really laid back kind of guy. I think you know him probably a lot better than I do, obviously, but he's, you know, really chill. And talked a little bit. He was able to talk about MLS as well and other leagues and teams, which was really cool. But I think it's a really nice dynamic too with NBA players in general. A lot of them seem to be soccer fans. I know when Josh Richardson came over for the Sixers, I knew him from a little bit from his time at the Heat before. He's a big Arsenal fan, as I am. I'm a big Arsenal fan as well.
Oh, hey, we got to end the podcast, man. I'm a Tottenham supporter. So
Tottenham,
we're
man.
Done.
Sorry,
we're
man.
Done. We're
I'm done. Sorry. I'm sorry. We're hopefully we'll listen, win the league this year.
I got nothing to say with the table looking the way it does. So you just keep going.
Right. Well, hopefully we know we don't mess up like we did last season, right? We held up a little bit.
Yeah, right.
But we're at the top now. But yeah, no, Embiid was super friendly, super nice, and just I mean, what a great athlete, right? What a great basketball player. And the fact that he loves soccer is pretty cool. But actually, an interesting story about the Embiid family too is his brother. I connected with his brother a while back while I was in France, and so I actually know his brother even more than Joel, just from my time in France and him coming out to games out there and watching other U.S. American players play abroad, and like when Christian was at Pulisic was at Chelsea. I know I got his brother tickets to watch Pulisic at Chelsea. So there's a little bit of a connection there, but no, that's being able to talk and in just a relaxed environment with Embiid and see how passionate he was with Joel about soccer, about football in general was pretty cool.
What do you think of the team now that he's back? What do you think of their chances for the playoffs?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. You know, I think right now they're sitting in seventh. They might get the play-in game. I mean, I just felt bad for Joel because, I mean, he was on a tear in the beginning of the year, right? I mean, the season he was having, I mean, was unbelievable. And just to see him go down, you know, you see how much it takes away from the team. But, yeah, it'll be tough. As anybody would tell you, as somebody who, you know, when you miss that amount of time, you know, and you come back in, you see how much he means to the team, but you can see that he's a bit winded, right? You know, it's tough to regain that match, you know, full game fitness levels. It's completely different from training. So hopefully he can get up to speed come playoffs and will them into, you know, a great run.
Ali, a number of you. Yeah, no, I'm with you on the great run. I wish nothing but the best. Listen, I'm a Sixers fan. That's my first love. And I think in the minds of a lot of Sixers fans right now, it's just, you know, avoid Boston at least until the conference finals if you can, get out of the second round.
Yeah. Like I said, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. You know, he's coming off a big injury and, you know, to really get back into that full game fitness levels, you know, over a course of a long series, it can be tough on him mentally and physically, especially physically right now. But, yeah, let's see if they can go on a run. I'd love for them because I think Sixers fans also fear the offseason that could be coming, right? With a lot of the contract situation and then, you know, who knows what's going to happen with the free agency market as well.
Ali, a number of years ago, you got yourself ready for a career in business. What do you anticipate doing when you're done playing?
It's a great question. You know, I'm still looking, thinking about all that as well, looking into different options. Obviously you touched on it earlier in the beginning of the podcast in terms of, this new role, right? So on the sporting side, yeah. You know, if it's coming off a bench, this and that, but off the field, I think, I'm also looking to see if I do stick in the soccer world, if on the sporting side, don't really want to become a coach. So perhaps, you know, I'd like to see if I think being a GM or sporting director or something like that really interests me. But I also know I'm involved in different business ventures, and a lot of those things that I'm involved with on the business side of things, I'm pretty passionate about, and I really enjoy it. So, you know, I think definitely when that time comes of the R word, I don't like to say it.
You're right.
I think I'd have to step back and, you know, have some time to think about the next steps. But I'm definitely enjoying, you know, on the field things right now, and also off the field, you know, filling up different buckets to figure out exactly what I'm most passionate about.
Speaking of the R word, I often quote my former color analyst, Steve Mix. I asked Steve, who played in the NBA for 13 years, how did you know it was time to retire? And he said, when you see that rebound, the heck with it. Let somebody else get it. What's going to tell you it's time?
Yeah, what's going to tell me it's time? Yeah, when I just can't keep up anymore with the guys, really, I think, you know. But, you know, our game, our sport in general now has become so data-driven and so analytical. So, you know, there's certain data points that you have access to now, right, that you can see for yourself. Are you stacking up? I'll go back to that Portland game, you know, when you said I came in as a six. You know who covered the most ground that game? 37-year-old guy. So, you know, I can still hang. I still got it. I know my soccer IQ takes over in certain games. I don't maybe have the same speed, but I can still hold my own weight. And when I can no longer do that, when I feel that, look, I'm just being passed through, or I can't, I'm breathing hard, and, you know, and getting out of bed in the mornings is a pain in the ass. I think that's time to call it quits. But for now, I still really enjoy it. I'm very passionate about it, and I still think I'm adding and providing value to a team, and that's important. If I'm no longer doing that and adding anything on the field, then I'll definitely step away.
Don't hate me for painting this picture. It's a dream of every Union fan, and certainly of you, to be able to raise the cup at the end of the year. If you're doing that at that moment, when you do one of these and you hear the ovation from Union fans and your fellow players, would it be easier to step away or harder to step away?
It would be much easier for me. I think it would be much easier. Yeah. I mean, I think I look back and I think if I would have done that against, if we would have managed, you know, the LAFC game, maybe that could have been the time, right, to go out on a high. But I think at this point in time, yeah, if we happen to do it this season, for sure, that would make my decision a lot easier. You know, because us athletes, us players, you know, we know what's at stake. I think we look at our careers, and we know the word legacy and what that means, right? I think I want my legacy not to just to be about soccer, of course, because I feel like I've been somebody who, you know, we talked about, touched on earlier, vocal outside the field as well about certain things. But, man, you know, from thinking about everything that went into coming to the Union and everything that transpired in terms of the recruitment and what I was told about the club moving in a new direction, about being more ambitious, and to what have we been able to build all these years, right? And the amount of success we've had and the level of consistency over the last 5-6 years. I mean, just to be able to lift that trophy, I know that would completely cement the legacy. And that's it. And there's no need for anything else after that.
Well, the legacy is intact, my friend. The number 11 will never be worn again. Thank you so much for your time with the Blue, and thank you for being with me on Fresh 24. Again, as I mentioned, you played a role in the World Cup coming to Philly in 26. You love your wines. You're going to have to make a recommendation for me after we're done recording. We're out of time. Thank you very much, my friend. Good luck the rest of the year.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. It's always great to connect and talk with you, and go Sixers.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to this episode of Fresh 24. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Check out our friends over at Philadelphia Sports Nation, a local Philadelphia sports site covering your favorite teams across blogs and social media. PHLSportsNation.com. Philadelphia Sports Nation. PHL Sports Nation. Enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience.